In a warm and cozy row house in Washington, D.C., a family settles down for homework.
Now?
Yeah, this one.
You mean that one?
This one.
Oh.
You want to read this one?
I want to read this one and then do that one.
Okay.
I mean, I want to do this and then do that.
That's the better way to do it.
Because then it
The Tuckers, Neely and Vita, sit with their 5-year-old daughter, Chipo. The home is filled with artwork, masks, and sculpture from Africa, treasures from Zimbabwe, where Neely and Vita lived for 3 years. There they met their adopted daughter, Chipo. Like thousands of children in Zimbabwe, she'd been abandoned at birth and left for dead. In a new book called Love in the Driest Season, Neely Tucker writes about the struggle to first keep Chipo alive, and then the long journey through Zimbabwe's bureaucratic maze to make the child a permanent part of their family. For years, Neely Tucker was a foreign correspondent, covering the world's most dangerous hotspots, Sarajevo, Nairobi, Kinshasa, and so on. The Tuckers arrived in Zimbabwe in 1997, a time when the country was the epicenter of the AIDS crisis in Africa. Unable to have children of their own, the couple threw themselves into volunteer work at a local orphanage, filled with sick infants. It was there they met a baby girl named Chipo. In the Shona language, her name means gift, and they remember the moment they first saw her as if it was yesterday.
He saw her first.
She was the tiniest, smallest little thing under these blankets. I describe it in the book as a forest of blankets. And I leaned down and bumped her nose with mine, and that didn't get a response. And then I was just sort of, you know, looking, and she reached out with her hand, and she grabbed my little finger, and she held it. And it has been 5 years, and I have not been the same person since.
She picked us.
Abandoned at birth, Chipo was found quite by accident, miles from the nearest village, hidden in chest-high grass. That's where Neely Tucker begins his book.
By noon, the ants found the girl child. Left to die on the day she was born, she had been placed in the tall brown grass that covers the highlands of Zimbabwe in the dry season, when the sun burns for days on end and rain is a rumor that will not come true for many months. She had been abandoned in the thin shade of an acacia tree, according to the only theory of events police ever put forth. There were no clues as to exactly when she was left there, or why, or how, or by whom. She just appeared one day, like Moses in the bulrushes.
Chipo's outlook looked grim. Most of the infants in the orphanage suffered from pneumonia or malnutrition. Many also had HIV or AIDS. During one visit, Vita was sure Chipo was at the edge of death, so she rushed her by cab to the nearest hospital. There, a doctor told her that if Chipo returned to the overcrowded and understaffed orphanage, she would almost surely die. He advised Vita instead to take her home.
We wanted her to live. We wanted her. We needed her. And so I did explicitly everything that the doctor asked me to do. I had no experience with an infant, especially an infant with special needs. And I put her in the bed in this little cotton cot next to me so that I could hear her breathe and I could just lay up against her. And she woke up every 45 minutes and she would open her mouth and there would be no sound that would come out. And then just a few seconds later, she would let out this screech, this horrible screech that you wouldn't expect to come from an infant. And it would immediately jolt you into action because she was hungry.
And so that's when the great feeding campaign
started. Exactly.
Yeah, when she opened her mouth, we put something
in it immediately.
And she, you know, I think that she just turned into this little bowling ball with arms and legs.
Yeah. Great.
And then at 6 months, Vita was changing her diaper one day. She was almost 6 months. Mm-hmm. And Vita leaned down and tickled her belly button with her nose and looked up, and she pulled just smile. And
that's
it was
the first time she ever had any reaction.
She was almost 6 months old.
You still remember that?
Oh, my God, I will never forget that.
We decided this is our baby. As long as we are here, this child is ours. We do not quit. We do not go home. If she gets sick, she gets sick. If she dies, then she dies. But that's it. She's ours right now, today. And anything else is a description on a piece of paper.
The government didn't exactly agree with you, though.
They took a much different opinion.
Yes, they did.
But that was the moment of determination that you reach and you say, okay, the fight is on. If there's going to be a fight, the fight is on.
A fight complicated by the fact that Neely Tucker is a white man who is asking an army of African bureaucrats to place a sick, chocolate-skinned infant in his care permanently. Part of the problem was stonewalling from the Robert Mugabe government at a time when the country was becoming increasingly hostile toward foreign journalists. But there were cultural issues, too.
You talk to God through your ancestors in Shona society. You do not just yourself talk to God. It is through the ancestors. Therefore, if you do not know who your ancestors are, you are literally lost into the universe. That is why there has never been a traditional practice for the almost 1,000 years the Shona-speaking people have been there, that there was a process of adopting strangers, as we would call it. It's all done within the extended family. It's a tremendous social welfare net.
With their adoption application languishing, the interracial couple considered sneaking Chipo out of the country. But after months of pushing and cajoling and pleading, her adoption finally came through. And though Chipo at birth had all the classic symptoms of AIDS, she's tested negative for HIV 3 times. The Tuckers is a story of love and determination, and a tale of the ironies of race. Neely was born in a highly segregated South. When he married a black woman, he lost ties with his family. Chipo brought his parents, especially his father, back into his life.
But the thing for my pop, he's not an emotional, touchy-feely guy, but he absolutely adores her.
Here's a man or a family that's grown up and believing in staunch segregation. You know, and I like to say that God is funny. He has a sense of humor because he is the only grandchild that you have at the time, and she's African, you know, and you love her to death, and they do. That is their grandbaby.
The main reason the book was, that I wrote the book, was as a love letter for Chipo to always have. It's not a children's book by any means. It is something for her to have 40 or 50 years from now, when Vita and I are long gone, and she can have something on a shelf that she can pull down on a rainy Sunday afternoon and flip through the pages and know that we loved her so.
Now 5, Chipo is strong and spirited, a ta-da kind of kid who shines with confidence, whether showing off her drawings or reading with her father.
Because that was a little bit tricky.
The abandoned infant, found wailing in the weeds, now goes to bed each night in a bright yellow bedroom where ballerinas preen and pirouette across her bedspread.